hello, Internet. February 2024, in protest against a U.S.-sponsored genocidal war, as bombs were falling and exploding all around, burning up the bodies of the children on the ground, huddling in tents and just waiting to die, this young man could no longer stand to hear the cries. International Drive in Washington, D.C., a young airman walked up to the Israeli embassy as mothers buried babies who had no milk within, as white phosphorus munitions burned off people's skin, as the troops were firing on those trying to find bread, as the body count was building up to 30,000 dead. Dressed in his fatigues, there on Embassy Row, he announced into the camera this was where he'd meant to go. An act of desperation and one designed to share the horrors of the crimes being committed over there. Like a mirror to the world, so no one could look away from what's happening in Gaza every minute of each day. Stood in front of the building, as ready as he'd get. He put his phone down so he could live stream it on the net. When he lit the fire on the day he chose to die, with no way to stop the slaughter, at least he had to try. As the flames rose up, yellow, red, and blue, did he look up at the cross and wonder what would Jesus do? Secret Service came to point a gun at Aaron's face. The airman didn't move. He just stood in place. He'd come to make a spectacle. That was understood. If he couldn't stop the war, he'd do what he could. As his body burned before us in an unmistakable sign, again and again he shouted out, "Free Palestine!" The 25th of February, 2024. That's a song for Aaron Bushnell, the Air Force, active Air Force member who self-immolated in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. in a very long and amazing tradition, which has quite a history to it, and I think it's for anybody who's been paying any attention to my Facebook reality, you've seen the thousands and thousands of Hasbara trolls who have taken an interest in my posts for whatever reason. Maybe they'll participate in this video, I don't know. But they only tend to comment on photos of me in a t-shirt that says something about Palestine. They don't want to promote my videos or concerts, I think. But one of their many talking points since 25th of February is about, like, how everybody else should kill themselves in solidarity with the Palestinians. Making a mockery of the actions of Aaron Bushnell, and who was, of course, just trying to illustrate exactly what's happening all the time on the ground in Gaza because of the Israelis and what they're doing to the people there, to the women and children and all the people in Gaza, killing them and incinerating them with all sorts of, by all sorts of means. And actually this tradition of when similar things were happening in Warsaw and the occupying army was the Nazis and they were killing everybody and starving them all, like exactly like what the Israelis are doing right now in Gaza. When an emissary from the Polish underground actually was invited in and got into the Warsaw Ghetto through a secret entrance and got out of the Warsaw Ghetto and got to, you know, be a rare person who wasn't Jewish, who was able to get in and out and see what was going on there. And then this guy also, Karski, he also went, he also got to a transit camp that was on the way to Auschwitz, and he saw what was happening and all the starved, naked bodies of the dead and dying Jews. And he eventually got to London, and where he was able to tell in, you know, exactly what was going on, what he saw to all the Polish underground government in exile based in London. And he had asked the Jewish Combat Organization, the ZOB, what was their Polish acronym, the Jews who fought the Nazis. They had five guns between them, 60,000 people with five guns, and they killed like over 100 Nazis, and in the course of all of them being slaughtered and the whole Warsaw Ghetto being burned and destroyed. And I think a dozen of them managed to survive at the end. But then when this emissary went to London and he talked to people there explained what was going on, did the same thing in D.C., and the ZOB, the Jewish Combat Organization, told him, when he asked them, what should people do to raise attention to this genocide that's happening and to this industrial slaughter of the Jews of Poland? And the Jewish Combat Organization representatives told him to tell the Jews in England, if they want to, or anybody that wants to stand in solidarity with the Jews in Poland, that they should publicly starve themselves to death. They should do anything as extreme as necessary to try to break the spell of, you know, denial and let people know what's really happening. And that's what the head of the Jewish Socialist Bund in London then did. He killed himself. He poisoned himself to death because and left a very long suicide note explaining that he was doing this in order to try to raise awareness about the genocide in Poland. And he didn't want to starve himself to death publicly because he was afraid that he would be taken to a mental institution by the British authorities. So he opted for a different course of action. And I will do more songs. This is ostensibly a concert rather than a lecture. But I've been writing a lot as well to counter the nonsense from the Hasbro trolls. And at davidrovics.com/Palestine, you can see stuff I've written, including in podcasts. And the second to the last essay in the writing section is taking on all the various other talking points of the trolls that have been leaving thousands of comments. They just try to sow confusion about, you know, for people who are not aware of the history. You know, if they can confuse enough people about what happened in the past, then they can they can get people to shut up, but they're just completely full of nonsense, easy to disprove. So, if you actually are familiar with it. A few months ago, as the UN agencies were all telling us that famine and disease was going to be killing far more people in Gaza than the bombs were killing, despite the fact that the massive bombings. They've dropped more than two times the tonnage of the Hiroshima bomb already. But I wrote this song, Famine and Disease, months ago. Places they report it. If you listen to the news, you'll hear the press conferences and the words they choose to describe the facts on the ground. On the Gaza Strip, you can hear the measured phrases, see the trembling lips, uttering words so rarely spoken. Eyes open wide as one official after the other speaks of genocide. From the head of each department, you can hear the powerless pleas. The next wave of the carnage will be famine and disease. As the fighter jets rain missiles down from way up in the sky, as the tower blocks collapse with each mission that they fly, as the hospitals are targeted along with everything, as the cameras show us the apocalypse they bring. With no buildings, with no homes, no structure remains once it's all been leveled by the ships and tanks and planes. Every medical practitioner around the earth agrees the next wave of the carnage will be famine and disease. As the Congress writes a blank check to facilitate the slaughter, Biden says he told them to let in the food and water, but they're not, and nothing happens but more destruction everywhere. White phosphorus burning, any skin exposed to air. Actions making clear that annihilation is the Israeli regime's plan for the Palestinian nation. If you survive the bombings, you don't burn or freeze. The next wave of the carnage will be famine and disease. Across the world, from Yemen to Algeria, militias on the move. From Lebanon to Syria, while on the Gaza Strip, if they have a working phone, they're trying to tell us all, don't just leave us here alone. Don't look away as this happens again, while this world still has Palestinians. Because for all these refugees descended from other refugees, the next wave of the carnage will be famine and disease. Famine and Disease is from my latest album, Notes from a Holocaust, which I would encourage everybody to listen to and share on Spotify. Put it on a playlist. It's all there. There's 20 songs that I wrote between October and December that are on that album. And this new one, song for Aaron Bushnell, and other new ones will be on the next album, which is hopefully coming out next month. Because Chet Gardner is a fast worker when it comes to adding parts and improving the sound.
Things are happening very quickly, as you know. Obviously, everybody out there is watching Al Jazeera as much as I do, I imagine. And one of the very recent developments is the United States and other countries talking about setting up a Gaza port, which, you know, was only realistic, of course, because if the U.S. is doing it, then presumably the Israelis won't bomb the port. Although the Israelis have bombed American targets in the past, it should be noted the USS Liberty was bombed. And back in the 60s. But who knows? They said it was an accident, right? It's always an accident. It's always an accident when Israel bombs mosques, churches, hospitals, and, it's either they were harboring terrorists, so-called, or it was an accident. When they bombed children in a refugee camp in Qana in Lebanon twice, 10 years apart in the same place, it was an accident both times, you know? They have so many accidents. there are, so you know, there are boats, there the Gaza flotilla, the Freedom flotilla, you know, as they're known these days, are have been doing a lot of trips over to Gaza over the course of the past 20 years. Sometimes actually getting in successfully, and other times very dramatically getting turned away, and in some cases killed and massacred. In the case of the Mavi Marmara, the biggest aid ship that tried to get there from Turkey back in 2010. But there are now plans afoot for more boats to head to Gaza from various different ports, and this seems particularly interesting to me, given the new situation with the possible U.S. military presence off the coast of Gaza. I'm curious what the prospects are now. But I wrote this song for the flotilla. Since the siege began across humanity, people have tried to show solidarity, marching and campaigning and searching for a way from Australia to Sweden to Turkey. Folks began to organize ships to the shore, to this occupied land of perpetual war. Some boats made it all the way to the port. Most others had their journeys cut short. Boarded by commandos like pirates on the sea, in international waters not governed by their country, but it's 2024, the year of genocide, and more boats are taking to the ocean wide, to the land where all the homes have been turned into graves. The flotilla is taking to the waves. The destruction has been almost complete as the Israeli regime aims to repeat the catastrophe of 1948. But some people just can't wait. They know that lives depend on whether they might fail. So soon the ships set sail to the land where all the homes have been turned into graves. The flotilla is taking to the waves. Thousands of tons are headed there through international waters, where all the world's countries must take a position, a life and death decision. Watch the demise of the Palestinian nation, or help the flotilla reach its destination, to the land where all the homes have been turned into graves. The flotilla is taking to the waves. To the land where all the homes have been turned into graves. The flotilla is... Well, there's a little connectivity issue there that seemed to happen right when the song ended. That was a interesting timing. And of course, it's a coincidence when we have connectivity issues during certain broadcasts, and it has nothing to do with the Mossad. That would be paranoid. And the next album that the next album is actually going to be another collaboration with Chet Gardner in Hawaii. But eventually, the album that we were working on in France last month will be an album by sometime in the fall, I believe. It's a production involving lots more people. And you know, as a history buff myself, when things happen, like events that have been taking place over the past few months around Gaza, makes me think about historical events that actually bear remarkable similarities to what's happening right now. Not unsurprisingly, because what's happening right now is very related to settler colonialism and practices of settler colonial regimes, and like the one I grew up in here in the United States. And one of the many maddening things about these Hasbara trolls is they love to talk about how I'm and other people like me and us, you know, are hypocritical because presumably they presume we supported you know, everything that the Allies ever did during World War II, and that we supported settler colonialism in the countries we're from, if we're from places like the U.S. or Canada, Australia, and that we, you know, are not critical of our country's foreign policies or past or anything like that. And of course, you know, they presume wrong. I don't know who these trolls are. Well, you know, I don't know who they are. One of the things that's very consistent about them is they're incredibly rude and disgusting and constantly making sexual references, and they're extremely sexist. And I can't imagine if any of them are female, I would be shocked, you know. But they're a bunch of horrible guys, and whoever they are, and most of them are really bad at writing. But that's okay. You know, I'm not critical of them because they can't spell. Lots of my best friends can't spell. I'm really good at spelling, but, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be. But anyway, going back to, you know, one of the things that, one of the historical events that I found, you know, that really came to mind as when all this happened, other than the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, was the uprising in 1862 of in Minnesota, led by a man named Little Crow. He heard that they were on their way when the settlers came. Little Crow knew that nothing now would ever be the same. The treaties he agreed to signed under duress. He watched as the land of the Indians was less and less and less. His people were left with a patch only 20 miles wide. A little bit of land by the Mississippi Riverside. A little bit of land with a very uncertain fate once this place called Minnesota became a state. Little Crow went all the way to Washington, D.C., where he appealed his people's case to the highest authority. Then they took away half the land allotted for his kin, and then even that little patch saw more settlers moving in. Little Crow watched them hunting and logging all the trees. He watched his people growing hungry. He watched the children freeze when their meager crops failed. He went in search of aid from the Indian agents who had grown rich from the money that they'd made. What should have fed the people lined their pockets instead. Lincoln sent an investigator, and that's just what he said. The standard was corruption, treaties made to be broken, along with comforting words duplicitously spoken. Little Crow told his people words bitter on his tongue. The agent had said his people could eat grass and their own dung. Peaceful coexistence could clearly last no more. He gathered up an army and set out to go to war. His warriors raided the stores of food that should have been theirs. They took guns and ammunition, put soldiers in their crosshairs. They won one battle after another, drove all the settlers out until divisions heading south were given a new route. Little Crow's uprising was finally suppressed, and the Indians of Minnesota were sent far off to the west. Whether part of the uprising to the authorities, it didn't matter, and they died of famine and disease.
Little Crow was killed picking berries with his son. Shot down by a settler out hunting with his shotgun. For handing in his scalp, the hunter made a dandy sum, and his bones were displayed in a museum. Little Crow was a leader, and it seems to me he made decisions when every option was impossibility. He had the choice to starve and die on what was left of the land, but he decided it was time to make a stand. He decided it was time to make a stand. He heard they were on their way when the settlers came. Little Crow knew that nothing now would ever be the same.
And I'm seeing a wonderful comment from David Heap here, and I want to just highlight that for a moment. Freedomflotilla.org to check out the plan for the Freedom Flotilla heading to Gaza in the next few months from various ports all over the place. And look at that. What else? What am I going to do right now? I'm going to do this one. This is another one from Notes from a Holocaust from my latest album that I did with Chet Gardner. She was looking for a place to have a baby, but with the hospitals destroyed, she headed south in a donkey cart to give birth to her little boy. She wasn't lying by a manger, no hay beneath her on the ground. Couldn't hear her newborn's cries with the bombs exploding all around. There's baby Jesus lying in the rubble, a hungry little bag of skin and bones, with his mother Mary broken there beside him in the place that they were calling a safe zone. Without a blanket, without a drop of water, nothing between them and the sky. We'll try that again from the second verse. Without a blanket, without a drop of water, nothing between them and the sky. The wise men from the east tried to come to see him, but they're trapped at the crossing in Sinai. There's no fuel for the water pumps, only for the drones always buzzing overhead, reminding every child there beneath them, the next moment it could be your mama dead. There's baby Jesus lying in the rubble, a hungry little bag of skin and bones, with his mother Mary broken there beside him, in the place that they were calling a safe zone. He's the Son of God, said the angel, as the babe began to shiver from the cold. There was a twinkle in his eye for a moment, before the rigor mortis took hold. This prophet who was born to save our species, this child who was the only son of all the tens of thousands killed so far,
Now we can add another one. There's baby Jesus lying in the rubble, a hungry little bag of skin and bones, with his mother Mary broken there beside him, in the place that they were calling a safe zone. In the place that they were calling a safe zone.
I just think that what Ansar Allah is doing, the Houthis, what the Houthis are doing, Ansar Allah are doing, in the Red Sea, is I'm sorry about those workers who died. I'm not in favor of people dying anywhere, but nobody should be using the Red Sea for shipping things that the Ansar Allah is going to oppose. You can go around Africa, or stop the genocide. It's a pretty simple arrangement. The news coverage of Ansar Allah talking about how they're, what they're doing has nothing to do with Gaza. It's ridiculous. Patently. Half the world's trade passes by here. So much of it goes through Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, in the port of Gaza, no ships can arrive, not a boat can leave. While every day hundreds are dying beneath the rain of missiles fired from the air, millions of starving Palestinians on the run and being slaughtered everywhere. No safe place in the Gaza Strip. No armies coming to defend. While all over the planet, people are asking, when will this savage bombing end? How many more thousands of children can be killed while we stand by? How can we just live our lives while we watch the babies die? Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all, when they say no business as usual while the bombs continue to fall. That doesn't have an air force, they're painting black, red, green, and white on the helicopters that they use to board the ships to show their cause is right. The president says this terrorism must stop right away, to which the Houthis respond, yes, that's exactly what we are trying to say. Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all, when they say no business as usual while the bombs continue to fall. Ships are going all the way around Africa to avoid the Houthi net. If Israel wants trading partners, now they might be just a little harder to get. We can blockade ports all over, north, south, east, and west. But the Houthi army are the ones who are no doubt blocking the traffic the best. Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all, when they say no business as usual while the bombs continue to fall. That's another one from Notes from a Holocaust, which is to be found on all the streaming platforms. And there are, as I mentioned, so many historical episodes that bear a lot of resemblance to what's happening today. And not all of them happened in Germany. Scotland, around the latter decades of the 19th century, was a place of horrible crimes against humanity. And ethnic cleansing. There were 100,000 Highlander refugees in Glasgow at any given time waiting for boats to take them somewhere safer, where they could live. Once upon a century, people lived above this glen. There were 50 houses here with parents and their children, but someone said they owned what those four generations had called their homes across the Scottish nation. Allotments kept on shrinking while the rent would only rise. One by one, the broken crofters left the open skies, the frozen shores of Nova Scotia in a far-off colony, or somewhere else across the sea. Once upon a century, from the ways of old, from something like the golden rule to the rule of gold, it's just the logic of the market. Supply and demand says to drive the people from the land. Instead of eerie silence reverberating all around, among the gardeners and shepherds, you would hear the sound of the pipes and drums and choirs, of the songs that would be sung, and the stories that were told in the Gaelic tongue. Once upon a century, you'd never think it could to turn into a field what had been a neighborhood. Once there were the promises of loyalty or clan, and then there was just profit if you can. If we travel back to a different time and space, it was possible for most to afford to live someplace. But it's the logic of the market, each investor's conviction, more money is just grounds for an eviction. Once upon a century, they cleared the highlands for the sheep. Most folks did not resist as the rent became too steep. They packed their things and moved, scattered far and near. You'd never know that they once were here. Just for the whims of capital, the biggest profits for the banks, you fight a war for empire and clearance is your thanks. From the crofts of Scotland to the sidewalks of LA, if anything has changed, who can say? Once upon a century, people lived above this glen. There were 50 houses here with parents and their children. So this on the 29th of February, the massacre of more than 100 people, Palestinians, as they were trying to get desperately in need of food. The Israelis had contracted a bunch of trucks to be sitting there as bait. And then once people got up out there to the trucks in the open, emerged from their ruined buildings, they were massacred. And then when they retreated and then they came back to the trucks later, perhaps on the assumption that the massacre had been a mistake, or perhaps on the assumption that there'd been some kind of firefight, or who knows, they went back to get more, try again, and they were massacred again. And then the Israelis drove over the dead bodies, or the dying, or the injured, and killed them with trucks. And then they said they said they were feeling unsafe because starving Palestinians were trying to get food. And so they had to kill 118 people. And then they said they trampled each other. They trampled each other, but it wasn't true. They all had bullet wounds. And then they did it again every day after that. Almost 5 months since the blockade was complete. Millions have hardly had anything to eat. Most had now fled to the border with Sinai. The rest who through the bombing had managed not to die were living in the rubble with the other refugees, hoping before they died of famine and disease, trucks might come with deliveries of flour, as starving Palestinians were counting by the hour. The army fired at every convoy that attempted to make it to the north, but this one was exempted. It was contracted by the army to come to this point on the map so that they could set a trap. They waited for people to start unloading the aid while they watched from above the pen that they'd made. They began to fire at those helpless below to kill their unarmed and starving foe. Scores lay dead or dying all around. People fled trucks amid the deafening sounds of gunshots and screams of those breathing their last breaths, whose need to feed their families now resulted in their deaths. When people went back to the trucks to try again, it's hard to find the words to even say what happened then. The troops began to fire more, round after round after round. Everywhere you looked, a sea of blood was what you found. The soldiers drove their tanks over the dead, and then the Western media just repeated what they said. It was chaos on the strip. We had to let the bullets rain. We can't have starving people grabbing bags of grain. So instead, another bloodbath, one of so many now so far, that makes Gaza Wadi smell like the ravine of Baba Yar. For a sack of flour, they'll shoot starving children dead, though that's somehow not how the headlines read. Almost 5 months since the blockade was complete. Millions have hardly had anything to eat. Well, I'll just note the fact that usually when I'm doing a concert, on the internet here, I have maybe 30 viewers, and at the moment I have 399 and 400, and I really like that, and I'm sorry that the reason seems to be because there's a genocide being committed and people want to hear songs about this stuff, And if the Hasbro trolls are responsible, I don't know who, somebody shared this somewhere that has a big following. I have no idea what's going on here, but I'm ready for the stadiums. It's okay. I'm not going to freak out. I can handle the fame if, you know. When I was playing for 250,000 people at a demo in Berlin, you know, I noticed that a lot of the other people were nervous getting on the stage, and they had never played for such a big crowd before. I actually had, but it wasn't nerve-wracking for me at all. I'm perfectly comfortable, you know, not trying to brag, but I'm going to do another song now. And what am I going to do here? I was just looking at a list of songs here and thinking about what the next song I'm going to do. I'm going to do another one. That last one I did was going to be on the upcoming album. I'll do one from the last album, Notes from a Holocaust, which is on Spotify and everywhere else. If a song could bring us together across the planet that gave us birth, to act as one, bring peace and justice all around this shattered earth. If a song could take down borders, take down fences, make them fall, liberate all those imprisoned, kept behind the ghetto walls. If a song could stop the bombs, so the next might be the last. If a song could change the future, so it won't be like the past. If a song could be a missile fired from the Iron Dome, if it could protect the children, keep them safe within their homes. If a song could raise an army and transport it on command, take us all to Palestine to defend the Holy Land. If a song could be concrete and put to use to rebuild, if it might turn back the clock, back all the babies killed. If a song could be a blueprint, instructions to show us how. If a song could change the world, then let us sing it now. If a song could bring us together across the planet that gave us birth, to act as one, bring peace and justice all around this shattered earth. There's, you know, as there's, of course, the Israelis have been preventing any kind of aid from getting in, and they keep on saying, you know, in the Western press that there's just delays, and you know, and they say, well, the Israelis say there's some kind of delay, you know, I mean, just it's just, you know, so they're letting in, you know, hardly any trucks, and eventually now, rather than actually challenging them straightforwardly, as they certainly could and have, in fact, in the past, long ago, done before, the United States is, you know, finding this like workaround with setting up a port and doing airdrops, and the airdrops have been just pathetic and in fact deadly, but you know, better than nothing. But the discourse around the airdrops has been interesting because I haven't yet to hear anybody mention airdrops like historic airdrops and how they have been in the past and how much volume of tonnage is possible to actually airdrop. And during the Berlin airlift of 1948 to 49, the United States and the United Kingdom primarily, their planes from their air forces and cargo, whatever, you know, planes that they had, they transported 5 to 20,000 tons of aid per day, you know, food, fuel, medicine, whatever, everything per day for a year and a half to West Berlin. And not all of that was through planes landing. A lot of it was through airdrops like the ones they're doing now in Gaza. And it's, and that's, you know, the same kind of numbers that the aid, you know, the agencies, the World Food Program talks about how they need enough trucks to bring in 10,000 tons a day, like 500 trucks a day or whatever it is, 10,000 tons a day, which is, you know, makes a lot of sense because that's, you know, roughly what the people in West Berlin needed to survive for that year and a half. And it's a similar number of people. And there were about slightly more people in West Berlin at that time, 2.8 million. So when folks were Sarah Wilkinson and other folks were petitioning and the government of Jordan and to try to step up the airdrops and with some success, I wrote this song. A blockade was imposed. One could come or go. And in order to successfully throttle off the flow of food and fuel, what's needed to survive to keep more than 2 million people alive, the authorities limited imports to just a few tons that would be allowed to pass through. To try to break the siege on the ground seemed impossible until the world heard the sound. Watch the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly. They drafted every plane that could be flown, determined not to leave these millions alone, to be cold and hungry or else to be subsumed. They said it was impossible, an endeavor that was doomed. Every 30 seconds a plane would fly away to deliver to those trapped 5,000 tons a day. More than 2 million supplied by air alone, thousands of airdrops flown. Watch the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly. Planes crashed as they do, 100 people died, but the flights kept coming, no way to put aside the needs of all these people to have something to eat, to have fuel and medicine and shoes upon their feet. It was in West Berlin way back when, and it could all be done again. To save the Gaza Strip or forever wonder why we just let all the Palestinians starve and die. Watch the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly. It's the reality of what's happening here in Gaza is, of course, as everybody who's watching this is surely keenly aware, is that the apocalypse is underway and it is being televised by its victims. It's another one from Notes from a Holocaust. That last one I did will be on the upcoming album. This one's on the last one. And it'll be on the one with the band in France, too. Such a carpet bombing, nowhere has ever borne. In the land where everyone is some version of forlorn, we watch the skies light up again, and if the one with the camera falls, another takes their place when duty calls. For the apocalypse will be televised, I'm watching it on this screen, live on camera. The Holocaust of Palestine. As hunger sweeps the enclave, cut off from every side, besieged from each direction, nowhere safe to hide. As the last drops of liquid trickle from a broken main, and waterborne diseases come as surely as the rain, apocalypse will be televised, I'm watching it on this screen, live on camera. The Holocaust of Palestine. Watch the men stripped naked and humiliated, see the bodies in the open, hear it clearly stated by every UN worker who has managed to survive. If they don't stop, then soon there will be no one left alive. The apocalypse will be televised, I'm watching it on this screen, live on camera. The Holocaust of Palestine. Hear the heads of state make their intentions known. Watch as they illustrate them as we've all been shown, by destroying every building, leaving no water to drink. If this isn't genocide, then what is it, do you think? The apocalypse will be televised, I'm watching it on this screen, live on camera. The Holocaust of Palestine. It's just such a pleasure to see you all out there on the internet, even though, you know, you're mostly just a bunch of numbers in the corner of my screen. It's a wonderful bunch of numbers there. I will do one more song, and thank you all so much for dropping by. And I will be back. I'm not sure when, but I'll do another broadcast here on the internet soon. And if you are in Boston, Massachusetts, or anywhere around there, I'll be playing in Boston at the end of the month on the 29th at the Community Church of Boston. I'll be doing a show here in Portland, Oregon on May 25th, which I don't have info on my website up, but I will soon get that up there. I will also be doing a tour of Australia in late June and July. If there's anybody out there in Australia, I got lots of dates free for more gigs, or some dates free anyway. And August, I'll be doing a tour of the West Coast from Portland down to Northern California and back. And that's completely wide open for anybody in Oregon or California. I'd love to hear from you about August. And in November, I'll be doing another tour of Scandinavia. If anybody's out there from Scandinavia, that's wide open, love to hear from you. I could potentially come with the band from France if we got gigs that are good enough for that. And then also a year from now, I will be back in England and hopefully elsewhere on those islands around there in March of 2025, if the planet is still here by then. And speaking of the planet, I'll do this song that I wrote when Donald Trump was first running for president. This is not election advice, by the way. I can't. I'm just horrified by them both, and I have no advice for anybody on that. But I have written lots of songs about both of these jokers, and here's one about Donald. We could tackle the economy first, get rid of all the billionaires, set the system up so that instead of hoarding, people share. Make housing, food, and healthcare basic human rights around the world for everyone is how we'd set our sights. If we could
get to that point, I could say that then we could make the planet Earth great again. With human rights around the world, there'd be no refugees, no safeguarding your homeland from terrorists overseas, no need for a border wall.
Well, somebody doesn't want me to finish this broadcast, but I'm just going to do the whole thing over again there for whoever it was is out there that's trying to stop me. It's just technology.
With human rights around the world, there'd be no refugees, no safeguarding your homeland from terrorists overseas, no need for a border wall, no jobs to protect. With a global basic income, it's simple and direct. Free trade, fair trade, same damn thing. We get to that point then we can make the planet Earth great again. We could take on other issues like the survival of our race, by which I mean the bipeds on this floating rock in space, the most invasive species anywhere around, the one that keeps on burning everything that can be found, the one that will get it together in the nick of time and then make the planet Earth great again. We can stop spending money on antiquated technology, such as tanks and missiles and most other things military. We can use those vast resources to make us all safe and sound. Windmills in the air, coal and oil in the ground. We can be the envy of the rest of the galaxy when we make the planet Earth great again. We make the planet Earth great again. We make the planet Earth great again.
Free Palestine. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I'll be back, and I will see you then, I hope. And yeah, I'll be on the road, davidrovics.com/tour. I'll be on the road in various countries, and davidrovics.com/Palestine to hear all these songs and that I've written over the past 24 years on this particular subject, and essays as well. And yeah. Shukran jazilan. Thanks again for watching and listening, and keep on marching, keep on fighting. Yeah. Until victory. Bye-bye for now.